we're going to continue in the series Walking with God. And I'm going to read a little bit from Ephesians. It probably will come up there, I hope. But I want you to get out there and walk. Better yet, run. And for all of those who've got a backache at the moment, I know that's not possible. But metaphorically, spiritually speaking, we are going to do it. Yet run on the road God called you to travel. I don't want any of you sitting around on your hands. I don't want anyone strolling off down some path that goes nowhere. And mark that you do this with humility and discipline, not in fits and starts, but steadily, pouring yourselves out for each other in acts of love, alert at noticing differences and quick at mending fences. And tonight we're going to be looking and taking a first look at Gideon. And I don't know if you know a lot about Gideon, but Gideon is a study in contrasts. He is a man who led a handful of warriors at one stage against a far larger army and won a great victory. Yet all the way along the line, you see this man Gideon filled with doubts, with fears and questions. He's a man who questioned God's plan, yet he did God's will. Having our questions, expressing them honestly and openly, is part of the journey of faith and truth. And I know that sometimes I've met people who said, oh, well, I can't have faith because I've got doubts. That's not true. Sometimes asking the questions is an act of faith, trusting God that he will answer you. So I want you to imagine tonight we'll come to that in a minute. Should have been a picture of the Vikings. I want you to imagine the Vikings invading England. And if you can imagine that scene, you can imagine Israel suffering under the grip of the Midianites. Or if you think of Syria today, and there would have been pictures here, and I've obviously put up the wrong one, but the pictures here of broken down walls, homes, and one of the pictures has just got a mum and her little girl walking down a street in which there is nothing but rubble. That's the kind of picture that you have to imagine for the Midianites having brought devastation to Israel. And they watched helplessly as their homes and villages were destroyed and their lives were endangered. Their condition is summed up in verse 6 of Judges 6, 11 to 24, and we're going to read that now. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abizarite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in the winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." "But sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" "But Lord," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together." Gideon replied, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it's really you speaking to me. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you." And the Lord said, "I will wait until you return." Gideon went in, prepared a young goat and an ephah of flour. He made bread without yeast. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock, and pour out the broth." And Gideon did so. With the tip of the staff that was in his hand, the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread. And the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, "Ah, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." But the Lord said to him, "Peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die." So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it, "The Lord is Peace." That story comes in the midst of this sense of impoverishment. The word literally means at the end of their rope. The people of Israel felt as though their lives were over. But there was another problem in this story, and that is that Israel had counted God out. Effectively, that was the appeal that Paul was making this morning in a part of his sermon, that if others count God out, Christians, God's people should not. And we have to stand in this crisis bringing God in and not leaving him out. For some today in the world, socially or our country, will feel like us, abandoned. And we have to bring the message of that Gideon got, "You're not abandoned." So Israel, thinking that God had abandoned them, cried out to him. They probably did not believe he was listening or that he was able to do anything to help them. Now that's not speculation, because in verses 7 to 10 of Judges 6, we read, "When the Israelites cried to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, 'This is what the Lord God of Israel says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of slavery. I snatched you from the power of Egypt, from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live, but you have not listened to me.'" God sent the prophet to remind them of his grace in their lives in the past. And I believe, and I hope you believe, that God always has a message for his people in whatever they face. I find it rather reassuring that not only does God have a message, he always has someone in mind to help. And in this case, it was Gideon, but he didn't know it yet. And did you know that the name of Gideon means he who cuts down? The names in the Bible are never an accident. God doesn't choose his people to do things for him by accident. It's always deliberate. The trouble is that when we look at Gideon in the first part of the story, we think he hasn't got much to offer. He certainly didn't think so. But he would be responsible for cutting down the enemies of God's people. I wonder who God is raising up today to do things like that. Not in the battlefield of military might, but in the battlefield of the spirit in our nation. I don't know about you, but I see a little bit of Gideon in myself. You know, I remember when I was being called into the ministry, "Not me, Lord, choose somebody else." Perhaps you see yourself in this passage as well. So let's look at the call of Gideon and look at Gideon's circumstances. Wheat was usually threshed on the top of a hill on a piece of hard ground. Oxen would pull a threshing sled called a noreg round and round and round with three great rollers of stone behind them with pieces of iron embedded in it. And they would cut the grain and the wind would carry away the chaff. And after that process, when they had broken the hard shell of the kernel, men would take a winnowing fork and throw it up in the air, and the wind would blow away the lighter kernels, husks, and the heavier grain would fall back to the ground. Now that's how they normally did it. And Gideon's family had managed to hoard away some grain from the marauders to keep it out of sight. And then we see Gideon. He's down in the pit, below the level of the ground. Hot, sweaty, perspiring, confined, trying to do the same job. And what would happen was that the wheat would go up, the wind would blow, the lighter husk would go, and then it would all fall down on him. That's what he was doing, just to try and keep some wheat to grow bread, to keep his family safe and fed. Poverty, that's what they were facing, utter poverty. And there are echoes, aren't there, today. This is what he was in. And Nelson Mandela said, "Poverty is not an accident. Like slavery and apartheid, it is man-made and can be removed by the actions of human beings." So we're hearing the call of Gideon to perhaps be involved in some way of alleviating the suffering of human beings. Echoes of today, isn't it? Poverty. There are 1.6 million children who are growing up in severe poverty in our world. There are people who are homeless on our streets. Now, I don't see many homeless round here, but I had to go to Birmingham, and between the station and the meeting, which was only half a mile away, a walk up a hill, I saw 30 people who were obviously homeless, trudging around with a cup, sitting on the floor, begging. In our country. And that's why Christians Against Poverty was formed, wasn't it? To try and stop people going down that slope, but also to alleviate some of the suffering that they saw and to help people off the street and many other things as well. But God's call to Christians to be active and proactive. But perhaps you feel like Gideon, powerless. The fact that Gideon is hiding from his enemies reveals a sense of powerlessness. He is as defeated and frightened as everyone else. And whenever we live in difficult times, stories like Gideon's therefore can encourage us. We too live in days of economic uncertainty. There are food banks all around us, poverty growing, and they appear. And I was quite shocked when I found this quote by Michael Gove, that he thinks people use food banks because they're not able to manage their finances. He's living in cloud cuckoo land. There are some people who can manage their finances, but they haven't got any finances to manage. We live in days when the government and society in general appear increasingly hostile to the things of God. So we have to stand up and be counted on these issues and win the day, but we win it by the love of Jesus. I think this rings bells for me with Gideon's story, with Israel's cry. But have we stopped our ears? Have we stopped listening to what the Lord is saying? That's part of the story of Gideon, isn't it? So then comes in the story in verses 12, Gideon's commission. It's instructive that while Gideon was hiding from the enemy, the Lord knew exactly where he was. The angel of the Lord appeared to him where he was. And the Lord came to him with hope and reassurance. "I am with you." And this is true. God always comes to his people. Now, you know it's that big word, theophany. And I just wanted to give you a brief list to show that this is not one-off. This is God repeats this. And why do we think that he stopped it after Jesus? I would like to tell you a little story. I was on my way to Lincoln Theological College on an exchange. And we had a wonderful week. And then on the way home, the others all decided to go by train, and I had to drive home on my own. And it was a pouring wet day. And halfway down this little lane leaving the college, the car just stopped dead. I put the bonnet up, and it was soaking wet. the engine, all the wires and the cables. You know, do we still have distributor caps in cars? I don't know, but we did then. And it was soaking wet. So I got out a rag and I started to dry it a bit. And then a car drew up alongside me. And the person rolled down their window and said, "Have you got a problem?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "It's soaking wet. And I'm trying to dry it, but as quick as I'm drying it..." And he said, "Oh, well, you need some gaffer tape, don't you?" Or whatever it was called in those days. And he just threw me a gaffer tape. And I caught it, and then I looked back, no car. Now, I'm not claiming that I've met an angel, but that's what it felt like. He either drove off very fast, but it was amazing because that's just what I needed. And when I'd wrapped the gaffer tape round the cables, they stayed dry. Turned the engine on, drove off home. Never thought about it. Slightly different story. When I preached in Malden in Essex, I preached all morning. I'd driven there. I had not enough petrol to get back to college. And I came out of the church and I'm sitting in the car thinking, what do I do now? And this little old gentleman came down the lane and he said, "After I left church this morning, God said I should come back and give the vicar this envelope." He wasn't the church treasurer, just a member in the congregation. And in the envelope was just the amount of petrol to get me home. Now, he wasn't an angel, but he was acting in God's place. To me, that was as much God being present in that moment. But these theophanies, well, Adam and Eve in the garden, God kept on walking with them at night. Abraham, that's the one we looked at last time when we were looking at walking with God, when he was outside his tent. Did you notice the similarity, how Abraham prepared God a meal and Gideon prepared, you know, so entertain angels unawares. It does mean entertain, doesn't it? Have a meal always ready, something that could. Hagar in the wilderness, Jacob at the river Jabbok, Moses in the burning bush, Balaam and the ass, except God wasn't the ass. To Joshua at Jericho and to the parents of Samson. They're all theophanies. God appearing to individuals at a specific time for a specific purpose to encourage them. And I believe it can still happen that God can come to you as close as that. But we have to be expectant. We have to be willing to be listening for him. Whereas I hear a lot of times people saying, "Oh, well, I heard God speak to me." Be willing for more than that. Be ready for more than that. So, God is talking. Are you listening? God is appearing. Are you seeing? And then we get to, whatever you do behind the people, you're doing it in front of God. Because this is part of God's promise. The Midianites did not know Gideon was hiding, but the Lord did. He had his eyes on Gideon the whole time. Even when Gideon was unaware of it, God was with him, watching him and planning for his future. Whatever you do, be looking out for God. And that should comfort our hearts. He is always there. We just may be a bit insensitive. We have the same promise, don't we, in scriptures. The Lord is with thee. His power is upon you. That's what that verse means. The Lord is with thee. Literally means his power is on you. God not only sees me where, God not only sees where you are, he sees where you can be. Mighty warrior. Wow. What goes through your mind when you hear that? You can't be serious. I'm sure that was Gideon's reaction. But that's the wonder of God's perception. The Lord sees not what we are, but what we will become after he is with us. The phrase that Lord used here, mighty warrior, is literally a man who is charging right into the face of the enemy. It makes no sense unless you accept what is seen through God's eyes. That is faith, seeing with the eyes of God. And every once in a while, I see me as God sees me, and I am amazed. Did you know that the Lord knows you? He knows you far better than you know yourself. We know that the Psalm 139, and I put these words up, "You see everything I do, and still you love me. You hear everything I say, and still you want me. You know all my darkest secrets that I try so hard to hide. You know everything I am, and still you love me." It's heartening words to receive into our spirit tonight. If you are like me, you often look at your life and see the mistakes, the failures, and the problems. You see a person who consistently fails to live up to God's high calling on your life. You see a person who loses far more than he wins. You see a person who, from all appearances, is always coming up short. But what does God see? That's why you get people like Gideon, who had all their questions, and still God used him. That's why you get David in the Old Testament. Jesse, the father, just saw the youngest son, good enough to send out to look after the sheep. He saw a mere boy, and he didn't even bother to invite him to the meeting with Samuel. But God looked at David and he saw a king. And so God, looking on the heart, not on the outward appearance, said to Samuel, "Get the young boy in." And when Samuel saw him, he said, "This is the one. This is my chosen." And when Gideon's family looked at him, where did he get that idea? "I'm the least in my family." They were probably always thinking of him as the weakling, the run-down one, the one who had to get in the pit and do the difficult tasks that nobody else would do because they were above it. But Gideon will do it. But when the Lord looked at him, he saw a warrior, someone who was persistent and patient and faithful and would hear what God had to say. And God knows you and God knows me. What we will be and what he will get us through. The best thing that we can ever do is take our lives with all its problems, all its failures and all its shortcomings and place them in the hand of the Lord. And we sang a song this morning, didn't we? And when the Lord looks at his hand, what does he see? Your name graven there. That's how intimate he wants to be with every one of us. And God is able to take that person that he sees and transform us into something powerful and amazing by his power. He took his enemy, Saul of Tarsus, and made him Paul. He took Simon Peter, the one who denied him, and made him a rock. He took John Mark, the scared youth, and made him a gospel writer. He takes you and me. Well, you have to finish the sentence with God. I can't finish it for you. When I was at college, I did a mission in Hull and I met a young man called Rex. That's another story, but I wanted to tell you the bit that follows that, because he turned up in our church in Mitcham one Sunday morning, unexpected, and I was delighted to see him. There he was with his long yellow hair, his bandana around his head, and, well, he sat on the back row and he expected in our, what he thought was a posh church, everybody to ignore him. And to be honest, you know, I thought one or two might, but the person who came up and spoke to him first, I'd never imagined that he would ever have gone near him because he was such a stiff and starchy old son. And that gentleman came up to Rex and he said, "It's lovely to have you here today. Have you got anywhere to go for lunch?" Oh, we got that. I was shocked. And he did. He took Rex home for lunch. And I met Rex up later in the afternoon. He said, I have learned what it is not to read a book by its outward cover, but to read a Christian by what he does. Big lesson for me as well as Rex. It changed my thinking about how you see people all those years ago. A profound effect we can have on the whole life and service for Christ of other people. We're going to say a prayer together. Well, we're not going to say a prayer. Okay, I will say a prayer. Father, when we walk out tomorrow, I pray that you will give us your eyes to see people as they are and how you intend them to be. For they are people for whom Christ died. They are people whom you want to see not just saved, but changed, transformed. And also, Lord, as we do that, we pray that we may see ourselves with your eyes, not just as lowly servants, but ambassadors, as people who you can use, and that there is no one, Lord, that you cannot use if they are willing to give themselves into your care and command. Help us to be like Gideon, Lord, coming up out of the pit and standing on level ground and marching on in your peace. Amen.